From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on June 26, 1997, with the release of the first book in the Harry Potter series. Over the next 10 years, the seven-book series would change the landscape of fiction, and it would spark the imagination of millions. And to date, an estimated 500 million Harry Potter books have been printed for the series. The franchise's estimated value is $15 billion. I don't know, give or take a billion or two. Who's counting after a certain point? People are naming their kids Hermione or, I don't know, probably Severus, Dumbledore even. And the series endures with Harry Potter and the Cursed Child on Broadway and another exhibit opening in New York City. So this hour, we're asking if there could ever be another book series like it. And at first you might think, of course there will. There's always another. But consider this. The first Harry Potter book was released before the internet was really a thing in most households. The last book was released before Facebook really became a thing. Times change quickly, and so do habits. Technology has a way of distracting us and capturing the attention of our children. And I will always remember the Onion headline that said, "New Harry Potter movie opens kids up to the magic of not reading." So there's always something to make us not read. Can there be another series like Harry Potter? We had roughly 640 people who wanted to be on this hour's panel. We determined four based on an intense Quidditch competition, and they are all in studio with us now. Jackie McGriff, welcome. Nice having you.
Nice being here.
Josiah Ball, welcome to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
I should ask, what house are you in?
I'm Ravenclaw.
I'm Ravenclaw.
Okay. Adrian Pettinelli, what house are you in?
Hufflepuff.
Hufflepuff, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks.
Chris Fanning, what house?
Gryffindor.
Gryffindor.
Yeah.
Okay. How do you know that? Do you just know, or did you take a test?
Well, I think for me, and probably for everyone here, once you read the books, you kind of felt a
know?
Pull towards a house.
Oh, yeah.
And then when the internet was invented by Al Gore, you went on and you took the test on Pottermore, and hopefully it matched up with what you felt.
Okay, so Josiah, what's it mean to be a Ravenclaw?
Ravenclaw.
What's it mean to be a Ravenclaw?
Just, I guess for me, as a personal, what I feel being a Ravenclaw, I decided I was a Ravenclaw. And then I took a test, and it told me I was a Ravenclaw, and I didn't want to take it again in case I got another result. And so, but I just feel like just the wittiness and cleverness and smartness, all the nesses of, in that category of just being proud of who you are and upstanding, upright citizen. It's kind of like what, for me, why I feel I am Ravenclaw.
Okay. What about you, Jackie?
Yeah. So the motto or whatever for Ravenclaw is "Wit beyond measure is man's greatest treasure." So as soon as I remember like reading that, I was like, okay, so this is the house of the nerds. So I belong in this house.
Exactly.
You belong in the nerds?
And within the nerds, yes. Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Adrian, you apparently do not belong in the nerds.
I don't know. I think Hufflepuffs are probably pretty nerdy, too.
Okay.
I think they're introverted. They're nice. I think nice. Mm-hmm. They're steady. They're always there.
Hufflepuff.
Hufflepuff, yeah.
Okay.
So they don't necessarily try to distinguish themselves. In my heart, I want to be a Slytherin. And I've taken the test more than once, and it keeps not telling me I'm a Slytherin. But
Chris Fanning, I knew you'd be a Slytherin. So.
No, I'm a Gryffindor.
Oh, you're a Gryffindor. Okay, okay.
So maybe a fine line between them.
All right. So for you, what does it mean to be a Gryffindor?
For me, there's overtones of loyalty and standing up for your friends and what you believe in. And I feel like Gryffindors are always busy. They're always doing things or going on adventures or not sleeping 8 hours every night, which I can really relate to. But yeah, that's not to say because the main characters in the book were all in Gryffindor, but it just seemed like they were having the kind of fun that I was having at that age.
All right, well, we're going to invite feedback from the audience, and I know there are Harry Potter fans everywhere. This was the easiest panel to book we have ever had. So congratulations to all of you for being in studio, because a lot of people wanted to be here. But we do want to hear from our listeners why you fell in love with the Harry Potter series the way you did, or maybe your kids did. And also, if you think it's doable again, if this phenomenon could be captured in the same way for kids, for young adults, for adults, if that formula is sort of a one-off here. And again, I know some people think, well, Evan, you're just ignoring history. There's always a next thing. But I wonder if our reading habits are changing so much with technology that there will maybe never be another Harry Potter. So let's go around the table. Jackie, will there be another that is quite this much of a phenomenon?
Just, I don't know. Like, as far as, like, how I was exposed to Harry Potter, like, I wasn't exposed to Harry Potter, like, the same as everyone else, you know? Like, oh, like, I grew up on the books and everything and stuff like that. I actually, so in my house, we weren't actually allowed to read Harry Potter because it had, like, witchcraft and stuff like that. So, yeah, so that's my background. And I actually had a roommate in college, and she, I don't think obsessed is the word, she would attend Harry Potter conventions, and she would either be dressed up as either Lucius Malfoy or Dumbledore. And wow. I remember her, like, I'd always been interested in it, and so she's the one who got me interested in the books. And so, I don't know, like, just based on my personal experience, I think maybe if it's not books necessarily, it'll be like something else, kind of like how like Star Wars was with film, and mm-hmm. how still like people, I mean, it came out in the 70s and people are still gravitating towards anything related to Star Wars. So I think there will be, it just might not be the same medium.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Josiah, could there be another?
I think, yeah, I grew up the same as Jackie, not allowed to watch it until my friend AJ, he was like, hey, we're going to play this video game. So I was actually introduced to Harry Potter by the video game. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, after the video game, I'm like, let's watch it. My parents aren't here. Watched it, showed my mom, and she was like, oh, this is no different than Lord of the Rings. This is no different than anything else we watch. Why were we so afraid of it? And so I grew up on, I saw the movies, then I saw them in theaters when they were coming out, and then I read the books. And the books are incredible. I know everybody here loves the books, and after seeing the movies, you almost kind of create your own imagination of what it would look like in the movies or in real life. And I don't personally think in the same as her, as Jackie, I don't feel like it turned out to be more books. I mean, they came out with the Broadway play, and which isn't my favorite thing ever. But I think different mediums. I'm a comic book fan. I would love to see a comic book style of the wizarding world. So I could see that happening even with comic books, or even like a YouTube channel that somebody does, or something more shorter and compact and just kind of keeps the world going, not necessarily Harry Potter.
This is actually really heartening to hear your story on this, though. And the reason is this idea, again, the Onion headline that movies open kids up to the magic of not reading. But you saw the movies and you wanted to read. And then in reading, even after seeing the movies, your imagination is taking you to sort of different ways of seeing that universe than maybe you just saw on screen.
Absolutely.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool. I'm glad to hear that. Okay. Well, Adrian, could we see another a phenomenon like Harry Potter ever again?
You know, I'm a librarian. I've been for the whole time the Harry Potter phenomenon has been going on. And I've had children regularly looking for that thing the whole time.
You mean the next thing?
Yes.
Like it?
Yeah, they read Harry Potter. They're so excited, and they want something else that gives them that same feeling, that has that same depth to it. And there's other books we can give them. There's other things. But I feel like, you know, stories are so, you know, they're primal to us as humans. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's there, that's possible for sure. But does the right thing hit? And does it get the audience, you know, that it needs, the exposure that it needs? You know, Harry Potter found Scholastic, you know, which is a great publisher to get books in kids' hands, to get books in any hands. So, you know, it's like, it doesn't happen all the time. You know, I think of Charles Dickens and how popular his work was in his day. He made a ton of money. I think it's a comparison, you know, and he had that brilliance of putting his serializing in the newspaper, right? And so there's always, I think, with these phenomenon, some kind of other thing that helps, you know, elevate it mm-hmm. and really make it explode, you know, where you see it being read across cultures, across class, across ages, that lots of different types of people are reading it, which I think is what distinguishes Harry Potter from a lot of other things.
So as a librarian, when you do have often, again, sort of younger readers, or let's say you get teenagers, you know, young people coming to you saying, I could not tear through Harry Potter fast enough. What is the next thing? What do you give them first right now?
You know, I really like Lady Alexander's The Chronicles of Prydain. It doesn't get read a ton anymore, but it is an amazing fantasy series. It's also a 7-book series, and it was a favorite of mine when I was a child, so I'm always trying to hook kids on that. I also really like, there's this Charlie Bone series that I think is really great, and sometimes I'll go toward... oh my goodness, Percy Jackson. The Percy Jackson books are great. So some kids, though, it's interesting. You kind of got to talk to them about what did you love about it. Some like the fantasy. Some like the adventure. Some really gravitate toward the relationships. So kind of figuring that out helps you get to what that child might actually want. But a lot of them just want Harry Potter to be duplicated. I think they want to erase the experience of reading it. And read it again anew, you know.
That's,
and
like, that's the sadness of finishing it, right? That's the sadness of completing something that's that captivating.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. So, but some good ideas from Adrian, by the way. And I'll scribble them down before the end of the hour because I know people email and say, what did she say? What did the librarian say? What else can we read? Okay. Chris Fanning, can we see another like Harry Potter?
Yeah, I feel like everybody's points have been really smart. So I don't know if I have much to add on that, but I think, it will absolutely happen again. Will we be around? Probably not. But there will always be a midnight release party of some franchise at this point, I think. I was thinking about this before the show, and I'm a big Game of Thrones person. And when this sixth Game of Thrones book comes out, if it ever comes out, it will be huge, but it will not be across ages like I think Harry Potter was. I mean, I was in high school, college, when the last book came out, and I was still going to these events at, you know, the small bookstores in my town in Geneva.
You mean to pick up the copy when it came out?
To get my copy and start reading it that night. And yeah, I think it will continue to happen. I think the Potter franchise is out of this world at this point, with a theme park and online games and apps and all that stuff. I think it will just continue to spiral, and they will, not necessarily for the bad, because I will keep reading any book that comes out, but they will keep milking this as long as they can.
I think it was Stephen King who said that J.K. Rowling or Rowling, I always do this, Rowling?
Rowling.
Okay. So I think it was Stephen King who said that she is the greatest modern storyteller. And as a parent myself, I only wish my son could have grown up and been reading when the series was coming out with these new releases, because every parent can relate to this anxiety that we have about, oh my gosh, is my kid going to like reading? Because there's all these things that distract from it. There's video games and screens and everything. To hear that you were lining up for not movie releases, but book releases, is so great. And that's why I just thirst as a reader myself, but also thinking about my son, for another phenomenon like it. I mean, you said that, what was it like when the fifth, the sixth, the seventh books were coming out? Some of you, because Josiah, the series was already out when you got into it, is that right?
Not the last two books.
Oh, so the last two you had gotten into?
Yeah.
Was it like big event when it was
huge
coming
event
out?
Everybody in my, I think I was in middle school when I was just in ninth grade when the last one came out, and people just went crazy in my school. I didn't wait in line personally because I knew everybody else would. it was definitely a crazy time for anybody that was a fan.
Jackie, what was it like for you? Because again, were you coming in later or no?
Oh,
you were.
Yeah, okay. I came in late. I started watching and then reading the books, because then my roommate was like, okay, well, you got to watch all of these. And then, so, like, I started with movie 1 through 4. So the fourth one is The Goblet of Fire. So then I remember one summer going back to school then, or not back to school, but going back home, or coming back home, the fifth movie was then being released. So then I remember watching that with a friend, or on some break or whatever. So when that happened, then I think what I started doing was that I just bought the books myself. And then I think it was the last two where then I was then finally caught up with everyone else, I think. But I, like Josiah, wasn't like waiting in line or anything. I was just like, no, because everyone and their mother literally is going to be there at the bookstore. So like, I'll just wait and then go get it and then read the last two.
Okay. Yeah. Adrian, what do you remember about the series?
So something that was interesting is the, you know, the first book was published in England before it was published in the United States. And in the librarian community, people were trying to get people to send to them the books from England. Hmm. It was going through kind of the network. So I was hearing a lot of librarians talk about this book for a few years before I ever saw a copy. And then I remember reading the first and second book in rapid succession, and then the third book on, I was at midnight releases. And my husband and I would actually purchase two copies because there was no sharing. Right. We were not going to be passing this book back and forth. It was a kind of a competitive reading situation. So I was myself genuinely hooked very early on, and all that excitement was just so fun. I agree that I wish it would happen again.
Yeah, and you look for more of this. And Chris, you were reading that night when the books were coming out later in the series?
I can remember being at a Relay for Life, you know, overnight, and then coming home in the morning, and my mom had gotten the fifth book, and I remember just sitting in our sunroom, you know, peeling through chapter after chapter after chapter and being like, okay, chapter 12, maybe it's time we just close this. You should go to bed probably and sleep and, you know, give yourself a little more time. But I don't know for anybody else, but once you started them, it was like, how do I slow myself down?
Sleep is for the weak.
With Harry Potter, you got to know what's happening and who's behind it. And yeah, it was nonstop.
Listeners, if you want to call the program or email, and I've got some emails I'll read in just a second, but let us know what you loved about Harry Potter, and if you think it can be duplicated. 844-295-TALK, that's toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You know, Jackie, I think, mentioned Star Wars and other phenomena and sort of other forms of media. Well, you're right to say that it endures, but one of the reasons it endures is, you know, Disney and other companies are deciding, why would we not keep making these? We can make more money. So we're getting Star Wars 9 this year. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there will be 10, 11, and 12. It may go on in perpetuity. Mm-hmm. Does that weaken and dilute a brand? Should there be a new Harry Potter series in any form? I mean, obviously, we've got the Broadway play, which Josiah loves and says, but, you know, are you concerned as a fan about expanding this in any way, whether it's prequels, other stories, etc.? Or do you think that's inevitable? Do you want that? I'm curious to know how all of you feel about that. Because money is a powerful factor here, yeah.
I mean, there's always that fear that they're going to drag it on and on and on. Like, I mean, I grew up watching, of course, like Star Wars and Indiana Jones. And then when they named that other movie, when they made that other movie that I'm not going to mention, to relate to Indiana Jones.
Oh, and then the Sorcerer's Skull? Sorcerer's Skull.
Yeah,
I'm thinking
Harry Potter one, the Crystal Skull.
Yeah,
yeah, one of the worst movies ever.
Ever.
Yes. Yeah. Really was. Yeah. Really was. Yeah. It nuked the fridge.
Oh God, I hate that. So yeah, there's like you're in the theater watching it, and you've got all this like nostalgia, and like, you know, I just remember watching Indiana Jones as a kid, and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited for this. Like, what are they going to do? And then at the end of the movie, the credits are rolling, and I'm like, I don't know whether to be angry or to like start crying right now because you guys kind of ruined my childhood at this point. But like, yeah, with the Harry Potter series, with the Fantastic Beasts series coming out and stuff, I was kind of iffy on it, like when they first introduced it, because I was like, okay, but like, I'm used to Hogwarts, and now they have this, like, American School of Wizardry, which I thought was weird. I mean, I've enjoyed the films, like, on their own, but as part of the Harry Potter series, there's, like, little Easter eggs that they'll put in the movies and stuff. But, like, at a certain time, I'm like, okay, like, hopefully, they end this soon. Otherwise, there's always that fear of, like, you're going to drag it on, and then there's really no other material to go on, and
it doesn't light you up the way the original seven books.
Oh, no, no. I mean, like, even with the last, let's see, the most recent Fantastic Beasts, like, there were some things, I'm not going to spoil it, but there were some things in there where you're like Harry Potter, but again, like, you're getting excited about like the Harry Potter aspect and not so much Fantastic Beasts. Mm-hmm. So Yeah, that's the thing with that one.
Okay, Josiah?
Similar, but I feel that a lot of it can be diluted. Like you were saying, the Star Wars, I'm not a huge Star Wars fan, but my pastor, he really loves it, and he'll go see anything and love every single Star Wars movie that comes out. And for me, I enjoy an expanded universe in any kind of life. I'm a huge Marvel fan, so all the Marvel movies that are coming out, it's a different universe than the actual comic books, because if you read comics, they have a whole bunch of different kinds of universes. And but with Harry Potter, I like the Fantastic Beasts series that they're doing, because it's kind of giving more into what J.K. was writing in the books and in the expanded universe. And like, it shows Gandalf. Or not Gandalf. Sorry.
Lord of the Rings.
Whoa.
Josiah, you're slipping.
I'm slipping. My mind's going ahead of me.
Oh, my gosh. You just outed yourself.
I did out myself. Dumbledore, younger. My mind was going to go to Lord of the Rings next. Sorry. So Dumbledore, as a younger wizard and, you know, teaching and stuff. So I really enjoy that. It kind of does something to me. But again, like, I'm excited about Harry Potter, mm-hmm. not so much Newt Scamander. So it's definitely something that I really look forward to, an expanded universe, but not as hyped as the originals.
Okay. Adrian?
I think that there's some really quality things that come out, and there's some really not quality things that come out, you know, mm-hmm. as we've touched on. And so fans are enjoy engaging in these things, if only to hate them, which I think is wonderful. I love when, you know, there's those three terrible Star Wars movies that came out. I'm a big fan,
the
but
prequels,
those I
yeah.
just Ugh. Reject. And I love how nice. I love hating them. I love hating them. So and I, you know, and I've seen a lot of eye rolling about the Cursed Child play, you know, and it, you know, you're like, that's part of the experience, and I think it can be great. And I love Josiah's story about coming to Harry Potter through video games. Yeah. You know, sometimes these things do bring people to, you know, particularly kids, to series and to great things. So it's not the worst thing that people do with money, I think.
Yeah,
that's good.
That's actually a really good point, because number one, it's like this acceptance that if something's profitable, somebody is going to try to exploit it. And it does sound to me like, you know, anything beyond J.K. Rowling herself probably is a kind of a weird, diluted, not really Harry Potter. But then again, George Lucas did do the prequels, and he thought it'd be cool to do like a 3-hour movie on Senate rules in the galaxy.
Some of us found that interesting. So,
did you? Did you really? That says a lot about you.
I love an expanded universe. I think it's really fascinating.
But I think Adrian's point's really well taken in that. If it's a video game, if it's a comic book, if it's another form of media, it may be the route that gets someone into the book, and then you pick up the first book, and the next thing you know, you're not sleeping. You're doing mm-hmm. Chris Fanning, and you know, you're just not sleeping at all until you've read all 7. So I think that's a fair point. Does it bother you seeing the expansion of the universe at all?
For me, working at a literary center, I was thinking when you were talking about coming to it through video games, you know, it seems like almost every successful franchise is now not only a video game, but it's also a Lego video game. Mm-hmm. And I grew up on Legos. I loved Legos. They weren't, I think, as commercialized as they are now. But if some kid is into fantasy and picks up a Harry Potter Lego kit, and that's what gets him eventually to the books, I'm fine with that. Like that, I'm not going to watch a Lego movie about Harry Potter, but if that's going to be a way to get a kid in the door to reading, I completely support that. I remember when I was little, we read The Hobbit as a family. Mm-hmm. And then when I got to a certain age, just before the first Lord of the Rings movie came out, I remember sitting in the theater with my dad and seeing the trailer, and he said, "Oh, I have a book for you." And so he gave me those three, and I went through, you know, Fellowship of the Ring, The Two Towers, Return of the King, and then to find out, oh, wait, there's the Silmarillion, which takes place before everything, and you get this other, you know, it was... exploring all these different, I completely believe in diluting the franchise and the magic of something, but sometimes that's just what one particular reader needs to keep reading. And that's, you know, that was really the start of my being in so in love with books, was having all those resources for one, for starting at The Hobbit when I was, you know, 7 or 8.
Adrian asked the question of readers who come to her desperate for the next Harry Potter when they finish the series. She asked, well, what did you love about it? I love that question. I'm going to ask all of you that question because everyone has a different answer. What did you love most about the Harry Potter series? Why did you get hooked so much on it?
I've, since I was little, have always loved Halloween. It's my favorite holiday. I was a witch for, you know, 3 or 4 years in a row. So this book was going to be a no-brainer. I got it for Christmas 1 year, and I remember reading it and immediately needing to spend my Christmas money to go and buy the second and third book, which were already out at the time. And then it was the waiting game after that. But, I mean, it had elements of adventure and magic, and I was the right age for it at the time. So the I guess, unrealistic relatability of it, I think, is what pulled me into it.
Hmm. Okay. What do you say? What got you in, Adrian?
So I was a fantasy reader as a kid. I read all of them, as many as I could get my hands on. So I was kind of primed to be a fan. But I think for me, what I love, and I just recently reread them all, went through the whole series, is I love how they grow book to book, you know? So that first one is so adventure-y, very kind of rollicking, and then they get more serious as they go along, more layered, really deeper.
Dark.
Yeah, dark. Yeah, so it's not the same thing rehashed. There's certainly elements that get rehashed through each book, but kind of a pattern to the book. But they really do grow, so you never get tired of it. You don't think like, I read this before. No, well, kind of, but now you've got this other layer, this other element that's come in.
Okay. Josiah?
I grew up reading The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit and stuff, and those are all people that were characters that were older than me, people I couldn't really relate with. And then these just seemed like normal people that discover their wizards and witches. And it was, the writing was more relatable for me growing up. And I really enjoyed mentally putting myself in the pages and just kind of like almost observing what's going on in this world. I'm very imaginative and creative in that way where it's like, I want to place myself in this. And there's even like the new app that does that for you. You create a character within the world and you play as yourself in the wizarding world. And I kind of was doing that with this book, whereas other book series, I wasn't able to do that as much as I could with this because it's, these are kids my age. This is great.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Jackie?
It was actually more what Adrian was saying, how in each book it grows. I mean, as these characters are growing, you know, like the story is growing, there's more happening. There's also too, like, the universe that she creates. Mm-hmm. I think that's always what immerses me into something. So like with Chronicles of Narnia, like that was something as a kid that I also got introduced to. So that universe, that world, it's always that. Or even like, and I'll go back to movies because this is what I always do. But with like even something like Avatar, I mean, it's only one movie now, but just like seeing that universe, or, you know, like getting immersed into that, I think is what draws me in. And there's so much that J.K. Rowling, that she put into Harry Potter. I mean, it's like she's thought of like so many things. I mean, to like the history, like there's Hogwarts history. There are, I mean, it just goes back like ages and ages and ages. You know, you have these four houses where while you're reading, you immediately identify with. So it's just like thing after thing after thing. I think for me, there's just like so much happening within the universe, and you know, with the story and the books and each of the characters, that's what drew me in.
Well, let's do this. So we're talking Harry Potter and what makes it endure and whether we could ever see another like it with Jackie McGriff, Josiah Ball, Adrian Pettinelli, Chris Fanning. And after our only break of the hour, we're going to do a couple things in our last 20 minutes or so here. We're going to ask them, was there ever a moment in the series that you thought it was going to become like, well, like the television show Lost, which, and you're watching the whole series going, this better not be heaven, it better not be heaven, and you go, oh my gosh, it's heaven. And it's ruined. okay, I know. I've got some controversial opinions on the show Lost. But the point is, was there a letdown? Is there a moment that they wish was different? Was there something that disappointed them in the series? We'll talk about that. And our old colleague Tiana Magnon writing in, who is a big Harry Potter fan. I like that she just, first of all, she dropped a comment and then some questions. Her comment was, Dumbledore as a mentor. He kind of sucked. So that's what she wants to say about that. She said, not really a question, just kind of a comment. But she did have questions about the prophecy. Was it really about Harry, or do you see the argument for Neville Longbottom? And she says, with Harry, the issue with heroes. He put people in danger because he thought he had to defeat Voldemort. What lessons on teamwork can be gleaned from the books, particularly the seventh, and how do we avoid the folly of shouldering everything? So good questions and comments there. And a sea of comments and interest in Harry Potter. So let's get that break, and we'll come back and dig into those next. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on The Next Connections, we sit down with some of the founders of Pits Forward, an organization founded to make one of Rochester's suburbs more inclusive. We examine their work with some of the members and a town board member. Then in our second hour, Bird Box has been a phenomenon. We also have a conversation about not just the film, but the depiction of mental health issues in it. Talk with you Thursday on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. Connections at WXXI.org. If you want to try to sneak in a comment on Harry Potter in the last 20 plus minutes, but our guests have warned me they're going to need another hour. So we might just preempt here and now and continue the Harry Potter discussion because we're about to go deep. Harry Potter has a new exhibit opening in New York City. It's on Broadway with The Cursed Child, and they are still selling millions of copies. The worldwide estimate now, 500 million of the original seven books have been printed. That is a remarkable story. For a series that came out really right when the internet was kind of taking off and finished right when Facebook was taking off, and that has us asking the question this hour, can it happen again? Is that a duplicable, I don't know what the word is. Is that feat, can we do it again? So our guests are talking about that. And real quick here, how many times have you read the series?
I've only read it once.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay.
I heard somebody literally emailed me asking if they could be on the panel saying they've read it 70 times. One time.
That's insane.
Okay. How many times?
I've read it through it once, but read Azkaban like 4 times.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I've read it a lot. I don't know.
Guess.
It was probably maybe 15.
Wow. 15
yeah.
times.
Yeah.
Wow. And Chris?
I would say I've done the whole thing probably 2 times, but then, you know, book 4, 5 times, book 7, 7 times, just because there's a lot of meat in some of those that I really love.
Are you going back in because you loved it or because you wanted to reabsorb and kind of rethink about what's happening?
A little of both, honestly. Yeah, sometimes it's just for research purposes.
All right, so Tiana says Dumbledore as a mentor, he kind of sucked, yes?
No.
No.
No?
I mean, I agree with her point that he isn't the epitome of what a mentor should have been. But I also think that Harry needed to figure some things out on his own. And without spoiling anything, you know, he goes and gets taught.
The last book came out in 2007. You can spoil.
Right. Shame on you if you're listening to this and thinking you're not going to hear anything. But
yeah, you said no spoilers, Evan.
In book 6, he goes to get lessons from Dumbledore. And he thinks, I'm going to learn these spells to learn how to fight Voldemort. That's what it's going to be. And he just gives him stories. He gives him knowledge. And I can see that as kind of being a letdown to some people. It's something I love about Dumbledore is that he's not saying, here are tools I want you to use. He's saying, here's information. I want you to put the dots together because I won't always be here to give you exactly what you need. So, yes, I see. I get her point. I don't know. What does anybody else think?
Letdown as a mentor?
He was doing the best he could. I think one reason this series has crossed age levels that adults read it just as enthusiastically as the kids is because adults are, which is different than a lot of other children's books, adults are main characters and they're flawed. So we see Dumbledore as a human being who didn't always know the right thing to do. So I don't know if judging him harshly is fair. You know, he did pretty good. He tried. He was doing a hard thing. So,
okay, Josiah,
I think he was a great mentor. I think anytime we see a mentor spoon feeding their mentees, is that what
it's
called?
Mentee, yeah.
I think that that's toxic because you're trying to almost create a replica of yourself when you mentor. And I'm a youth pastor at my church, and I kind of put myself as that, like I'm mentoring these students. And if I try to make them into models of me, that's not them living their true selves. Mm-hmm. And kind of what you were saying with giving him knowledge and just letting Harry figure it out for himself is, I think, the best way to mentor, because you can almost be like the bumpers on a bowling alley, and you can bumper them through, but they're the ones that are doing the direction to knock down the pins.
Okay, Jackie.
I'm going to agree with everyone. And I would also add to that, I would argue that book versus movies. In the books, it's understandable, especially, I think it's around like the fifth book, right? Order of the Phoenix, where he kind of lets Harry starts to figure things out. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the book compared to the movie, I think it's understandable in the book. I don't think it translates so well in the movie. Mm-hmm. And that's why maybe, at least for me, like, where she's coming from as far as saying like Dumbledore wasn't really that great of a mentor, I'm like, I could see that with more of the movie, because I don't think they really explained, or it didn't translate as well. But in the books, like, I remember reading it, and that's, by the way, my favorite of the series is Lord of the Phoenix. I know.
No, it's okay.
Yeah. sorry.
Wow.
yeah. But no, I
did you
say,
feel judged right
no,
across
I'm
the
not
table?
Judging. I'm not. I just am fascinated. That's
okay.
All.
I mean, he did express that he wanted to, that he did enjoy the prequels of Star Wars, but that's another conversation.
Oh,
anyway.
That is another episode.
Another episode, another whole podcast.
One of these days, I'm going to do like a whole week on the 10 people who enjoyed the prequels. What happened in your life that led that to happen?
How did that
happen?
I will watch them if they are on, because I love Star Wars. You know what?
You're not letting Jar Jar Binks derail a conversation.
I hate Jar Jar Binks. Everyone hates
Jar Jar. We're about
to
solve the prophecy, okay?
Yeah.
No,
help me out.
So here we go. So before we get to solving the prophecy, Robert says, Evan, the next Harry Potter series has already come. It's called A Song of Fire and Ice, better known as Game of Thrones.
Boom.
House Lannister Forever Hear Me Roar. Ooh. That's from Robert. No?
Yeah, I mean,
It's a phenomenon, but
it's
I
not
think
the
that,
same.
Yeah, the difference is it doesn't, I would never give that to a child. I've
no.
read them all
yeah,
quite
no,
avidly.
Sometimes I don't think I should have been reading them.
I know, but I'm scarred.
yes.
So.
Yeah.
I'm too far in to get out, it's a more niche, I think, thing than Harry Potter.
Well, I think that blew up because of the show. People read it, but I feel the fad of it became because of the show.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Versus Harry Potter was like, people went crazy about the books before there was a movie.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Tristan in Rochester on the phone next. Go ahead, Tristan.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Thanks for having me on. So I work with Chris, Writers and Books. So hi,
Tristan.
Chris.
Hi. Thanks for calling in.
No problem. So my question goes to the nature of long franchises, mm-hmm. things like Star Wars, Star Trek, Harry Potter. You know, these are all things like the original big franchises like Star Wars got me into wanting to be a writer myself. But my concern is when I see things like Marvel and Star Wars planning 10 years of movies, 15 years of movies, what I'm seeing is creators of these films are just entering elementary school. They're not coming up with their own ideas so much as they are funneling them through these franchises. So I was wondering what people on the panel thought about the sort of transition between the short story form of being an independent creator and a young aspiring writer, as opposed to trying to write to these larger mm-hmm. franchise forms. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks a lot, and I'll see you later, Chris.
All right, thanks, Tristan. Okay.
Yeah, that's a tough question.
Yeah, I think it's like, again, if you are, as he was saying, a young writer starting out and you're coming up with this story, and I mean, I'm sure people have looked into how J.K. kind of planned out these books and her notes or extensive notes, and this happens here and this happens here. And then to, draw out a franchise and say, okay, well, this already exists, so I don't have to make up this part of the world. I just have to pull this thread out. There are Fantastic Beasts. Let's make 5 movies about a book that's actually just a bestiary and not actual story. That bothers me. Am I interested in Fantastic Beasts? Yes. Like, I'm still going to follow it. I'm still going to see it. So I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I guess what I was hearing in that question is kind of the concern for young writers and mm-hmm. how they'll develop. And I feel like young writers have always kind of mimicked. So if they're, you know, it's normal for an 11, 12-year-old to be writing characters they know, I think, always. But I think what pulls somebody to writing is their own stories in the end. I think that wins. I think the kind of people who maybe want to pull toward, even toward writing, you know, Marvel, particularly if you look at those kinds of franchises, they're trying to pull in their own story into the universe. Mm-hmm. And you see that in a lot of those, that there's these kind of really personal stories in, you know, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that would kill writing.
All right, well, should we solve the prophecy thing? Let's do this. let me, before we do that, because again, that's what Fanning says we need another hour for. I do have an email from Sarah, just wanted to know, just said, Evan, I know this is going to offend your panel, but I never read the Harry Potter series, but I do have young children. They mentioned that it gets darker as the series goes on. If they are to start, how young is too young for Harry Potter as a series? The first book, there is no too young, I don't think. I don't know about 5, 6, 7. What's too young?
This is crazy because my coworkers and I at Writers and Books were just talking about this 2 days ago before I was contacted about this show. And they have young children, and one of my coworkers is reading book 6 with her 7-year-old now. They have read the entire book together, and, you know, she has read it before and kind of not necessarily tells her what's coming, but her daughter knows, you know, when it's too much, she says, you know, we're done reading for right now and we'll come back to it. So I don't know. It depends on the kid and how they're being exposed to it. I don't know. What do you see in the library? What's the reading recommendation age
for a librarian?
Yeah, you know, because I have had the conversation a million times, and it does depend on the kid. You know, I have a friend and her 2 kids. Actually, her older child has not read all the books. Her younger child has. Mm. So, and that has to do with the children and their sensitivities. You know, some kids are very bothered by death, and you know that's coming in pretty early in the series, certainly. You know, it's talked a lot about in book 3, and then there's a major one in book 4, and then forget it after that. So if you've got a child who's really apprehensive about that, then that's something to be aware of. Other kids, the intensity of some of the action can be problematic. So it's, you have to know the child. And reading together is the best.
Is there a general guideline?
I mean, I would say that I agree with you. The first 2-3 books, almost any age, it's fine. After that, book 4 and certainly book 5, I'd be looking at a 5th grader, probably 4th, 5th.
Okay. Yeah, good advice. Anything you guys want to add? Agree?
Agree.
Okay. Okay, so Tiana, by the way, is taking to Twitter to push back on the Dumbledore mentorship. She says, are we gonna pretend that Dumbledore didn't criticize his own mentor style? He even told Harry he let him down. Mm-hmm. He let Sirius down and members of the Order. The 6th book, Occlumency, happened because he realized he had to get his blank together. So Tiana is just going to die on this hill. Dumbledore is bad mentor. But you know what, Tiana, we're going to move on to your next point because this entire room got fired up just with the idea. So Tiana says, was the prophecy actually about Harry, or do you see the argument for Neville Longbottom?
Neville Longbottom in the Chamber of Secrets, Neville Longbottom in the Goblet of Fire. I mean, what do you guys think?
Oh, gosh. I'm looking at you guys.
I think it's prophecy, and in whatever way it went, it was going to go to that child. I think it could have easily have been Neville. It depended on...
Yeah. Is this a big debate among fandom?
This is
huge. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if it's much of a debate as much as it is a talking point that we find out the prophecy could match up with one of 2 children. It could have been Harry, and it could have been Neville, and Voldemort interpreted it the way that he saw fit and went and chose Harry, and so it was Harry. But
so there's not a debate about this, or
that's how I feel.
Like talking amongst friends who are Harry Potter fans as well, we're all talking about, like, okay, so there's always this big thing, you know, when you read a book first and it comes out in the movie, you're like, okay, what the heck are they going to change? Were they going to leave in? Were they going to take out? Because otherwise, like, each of these movies would easily be 3 hours long.
Yeah,
but I would totally watch. Anyway.
Absolutely.
But so the big thing among my friends was like, well, they're supposed to, like, throughout the story, you're thinking, okay, maybe this prophecy is pointing towards Neville. In the movies, again, this is not as translated. And I remember that being a big thing.
So they ditched that whole idea in the movies? Is that what you're saying?
Right. Like, yeah. Like, yeah, you don't, you never get that sense through the movies.
It's just another character almost.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And so you're like, because then what's supposed to happen, like, okay, so in Deathly Hallows Part 2, right, like when Neville, that famous scene where he, like, takes the sword and, like, mm-hmm. chops off Nagini's head, that's supposed to be, like, the big, oh my gosh, like, it's supposed to be bigger than what it is, because throughout the entire story, you're thinking Neville's supposed to, like, fulfill this prophecy. He's the one who's supposed to, you know, defeat Voldemort. And like, that's in the movies, that's not as well translated. So it's just like, you know, Neville, the one who's always been the one being picked on and stuff like that, you know, finally gets his revenge. But, I mean, it's more than that, and I don't think that's translated in the movie as
much. All right, so forget the movies. Is there an argument for it in the books? I mean,
yeah. I mean, yeah, easily. Like, when you're reading, you're thinking, okay, this would be one of two people, like either Harry or Neville. So I did get where she's going with that. I would argue, for a long time at least, when I was reading the books, I thought it might have been Neville.
Okay. Did you, Josiah?
I never thought it would be Neville, but I think when the books were coming out, people were talking about it, and I feel that, I'm like, it's called Harry Potter. And that's for me, I'm like, it's like,
sort of gave it away on the cover.
That's how I am. Like, it's, why would, you know, but I understand the argument of it, but I think it'd be cool. And I don't know if anybody's done it, but to see that kind of side of it play out too, mm-hmm. which could be the next thing, you know, like related to it. But I don't know. I was like, it's Harry. Obviously it's just going to be a Harry book and a Harry book. And yeah, it's not the discussion I was ever really in a part of.
Would you have liked it in the last book if they would have pulled like a Cuse and Lindelof and Lost, whereas all of this was a dream, all of this was a dream, and then the new series is going to be about Neville, and it's going to be Neville Longbottom and the Chamber of Secrets.
I would not have liked that.
No. That was my idea. It really worked for Cuse and Lindelof. Is there an argument for Neville on the prophecy?
You know, I think some of it took both of them in the end mm-hmm. to defeat mm-hmm. Voldemort.
Right. Right.
Really equally. Mm-hmm. So I think she may have actually been making the point that prophecy is a bunch of hooey. Mm-hmm. And that it doesn't matter, that it matters what people actually do. And what they believe in themselves, you know.
And yeah. Tiana's follow-up point, you know, Harry taking too much on himself is mm-hmm. agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny, especially on my reread. I'm like, man, Snape is right. Harry is arrogant.
Yeah,
that guy had a point.
Right. Robert says, "I don't care what age you are. Everyone cried when Hedwig died. Mm-hmm. I loved that owl."
Ugh. And that's just the beginning. Book 7, it's like, get ready.
Spoiler alert, they're all going to die.
Everyone dies in the end.
How does Hedwig die? Are we allowed to say that? We can say that. How does Hedwig die?
It's kind of like accidental, almost.
Mm-hmm. He takes the kill shot. It's aimed at Harry, and Hedwig comes in. And
mm-hmm. That's horrible.
That owl wouldn't have made it through the whole book anyway. They were very busy.
Okay, so in our last couple of minutes, did anything stand out to you and make you go, this is the most disappointing part, was when the author took us this way? Anything, Jackie? You go back to Harry Potter and go, boy, I loved it, but this didn't work for me.
Okay, this is just personal preference, and I feel like I'm going to get a lot of eye rolls. But, but, I mean, whenever, I don't know, with the exception of like Ron and Hermione, because I saw that coming, whenever they like go to any of like the relationships, like Harry and Cho, I don't care for. Lavender and Ron, I really didn't care for. Ginny and many of her boyfriends throughout the series, it's like, I don't really care about any of it. Like, I don't know, but that's just a personal preference. And I know you got to have like some love interest in there, because, you know, they're growing teens. Mm-hmm. So
that didn't work for you,
right?
Okay.
Yeah,
all right. Josiah,
I mean, some of the deaths specifically, like with Harry, I just feel like he never got a break. Everybody in his life like almost dies, like that he loves and he clings to, and you see it coming, but you don't want it to happen. With all the mentors and people he looks up to in his life, and that is one of those sensitive things where kids are reading, and it's like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. Even one of my students, you know, she was talking about Harry Potter and how she like bawled her eyes out for days because of it. And one specific death, because I love the character, I'm not going to say, but it's just, you know.
Say it.
What book?
Which book? Yeah.
Oh, we got to move here.
We got to move on.
Say it.
Serious.
Me too.
Me too. All right.
That was my moment.
I was crying.
It was unnecessary.
It was so unnecessary.
It was unnecessary.
Unnecessarily cruel. Crying for days. At all.
Crying
I thought it
for
was
days,
unnecessary
Chris.
To the plot. I thought it was mean. I didn't like it.
Okay. No. All right. So that would that be your moment?
That would be my moment.
Okay. Yeah. Fanning, 20 seconds. Anything stand out?
Just my personal beef is if the cursed child is considered canon. Mm. I read that. And so many things seemed out of character for so many people. If we're talking about the books, the epilogue at the end of book 7, I think, could have been better. That it was just too kind of like an everything wrapped up and there was never a dark like that doesn't seem right.
Yeah. Wrapped it up too nicely? Too
just, it could have been written differently, I think.
Okay,
yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I've really enjoyed the conversation with Chris Fanning and Adrian Pettinelli and Jackie McGriff and Josiah Ball. Great, not only a great discussion, but a great discussion about what makes this so special and whether we could see it again. I hope we do. I, for one, hope we all get fired up for another series the way the world got fired up for Harry Potter. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very fun. Thanks to Rob Braden, the engineer, and Megan Mack is the producer. I am not a Slytherin. I don't think. Not really sure. I'm a Hufflepuff, I'm told. I don't know if I want to be a Hufflepuff. All right. I'll talk to you tomorrow.